Wouldn't that be great? Just provide the answers and you've put in the equation and it tells us how to love. I mean, our children need love. Our homes need love, don't they? You know what a formula is. Perhaps one of the most widely known formulas, just about everybody knows it, is E equals MC squared. All you high school kids know it, right? E equals MC squared. It's Albert Einstein's formula for energy. Energy equals mass times the speed of light squared. Okay. But you know, it's one thing to have that formula. It's another thing to go to nuclear fission and have an atomic blast, isn't it? Two different things altogether. Well, what I want us to think about is this formula that goes to the action or the output that goes today. And what we've seen is that love is not just a word or just a feeling, maybe that, but it is a responsibility, isn't it? Love is a responsibility. And just like we talked about with the boys and girls, if they love their pets, then that implies a responsibility, doesn't it? To see that the pet is cared for, that he is fed, that he is walked. And, of course, I'm not advocating anybody get a pet if they don't have one, but I am advocating that maybe we should consider how that does help us learn to love. And, you know, if we don't show that action, what happens? The dog runs up to us at night. He's hungry. He starts yapping. Or if he needs to go outside, if we're too busy, we don't really love. So, parents, this helps us to teach our children about love, doesn't it? Well, let me ask you this question. Where do they learn love? Where do our kids learn about love? I think probably one of the most natural things, they learn it from us, right? And we need to be honest. Love means responsibility. It's not just a feeling. Love means somebody's got to fix that car when it breaks down, right? Love means somebody's got to prepare breakfast for the family in the morning. Love means that somebody's got to prepare the kids for school and help them to get going. Love has responsibilities. Amen? You know, the Bible talks about this kind of responsible love, and I'd like to believe that this is the kind of a natural love. Mothers who have children know naturally that it instinctively that this child needs their nurturing care. And the Bible talks about natural love, and it is sin to deny this kind of natural love. So that needs to be encouraged, this natural, responsible love. And we need to see that in our families. Our children need to see it in families, don't they? They need to see the responsibility of mothers and fathers showing responsibility in love. Jesus said in 1 Timothy, not Jesus, that was Paul. 1 Timothy 5, verse 4, that widows who have children or grandchildren, they need to learn to show piety at home and provide for their parents in their old age, because this is religion that is put into practice. Now, Jesus said in Matthew 15, that's the verse I was thinking of, that when many people said, we cannot help our parents in their old age because we've devoted everything we have to God and His kingdom. You know what Jesus said? No. The great commandment is to honor your father and mother. And that means to provide for them, even financially. To care for them in their old age. And if you say, well, I'm just devoting it all to God, you have not done what is right. So this responsibility comes through in so many ways that we want to teach our children. Now, we didn't say a real lot about family love, but family love is something that we teach our children too, and that's very important. The Bible talks about husbands loving your wives as Christ loved the church, and wives giving respect to their husbands. And in this way, love is fostered toward our children. I always think of my dad when I think about the love of a man for a woman. And I think perhaps he taught me a lot about this love ideal. Not just the fact that he stayed with my mother for a number of years, cared for her in her old age, but my mother was a real short lady, real short, and my dad was a real tall guy. And I remember when I was growing up, how he would go over and wrap his arms around her and look over me and wink. You know what that said? I love this woman, your mother. So you know what I did growing up? Go to this woman, wrap the arms around her, look at my son, and wink. And where did I learn that? I learned that from my dad. And I'm hoping that maybe my son is passing on that little tradition or something. But I think that children learn most about love in families, don't they? So they learn it from you, dads. They learn it from you, moms. And they even learn it from brothers and sisters about love. In our society today, there's so much that's talked about sex, lust. And I don't think that lust and sex have to be contradictory, because when you bring that together, when there is responsibility, then it is not just desire that has no responsibility. And so for me and my family, I learned a great deal about that from two older brothers who always said to date someone that was worthy of being a mate, and to always show respect toward girls, and you yourself always be the kind of person that someone is looking for to respect and love. That shows responsibility, and that is the Christian thing to do. Now, I think in today's world, we have to admit there are some families that are divided. Maybe the father lives here, the mother lives there, but there's still that responsibility, isn't there? And children, if you have parents like that, your dad still loves you and shows his love. Maybe it's on weekends, or maybe it's at Christmas, or maybe it's during those special times of the year, and it's certainly during responsible times of caring for you financially. And mom, she has a job and a responsibility too. So even in divided households, still there is love, isn't there? So we have to mention that. But they learn that love and that type of respect, even if that happens, that there's been a major responsibility era. Now, what I really want to talk about is this Jesus love. This Jesus love, and I'm going to call it that in contrast to what we hear in the world. How do we learn this Jesus love? Well, as you read in the Bible, you find that Jesus had a love that went beyond just friends and family. In fact, he encourages us to go beyond our family as a natural way of loving and love what we've termed in our parable series, the less, the least, and the lost. That's the people who are hurting. That's the people who are in trouble. That's the people that are burdened down with cares and problems. That's the kind of person that I don't naturally want to have. I mean, why would I want somebody to put burdens on my shoulders and weigh me down? Why would I want someone to share their concerns or their issues about in life? Why would I want to help someone who's an outcast? The reason that I would give you is to be like Jesus. Think about some of the people in the Bible. Now, Jesus wasn't what I'd call he wasn't too keen on being socially acceptable. You know, when he got to that well, and this is a Samaritan woman, you know what he should have done? He should have done a racial profile and said, this is not going to help my ministry. And that's what the disciples were thinking, weren't they? This woman is not going to help us at all. But Jesus, showing the love of God, reached out to a hurting woman. And how do we know she was hurting? How many times had she been divorced and remarried? How many issues did she have in her life of difficulties and problems, of feeling rejection after rejection, not able to provide a home, not able to satisfy a husband, not able to provide and to be a person of worth? And yet the whole example of this woman that Jesus demonstrates is a responsibility that God has for the lost, the least, and the sinner. So she went home happy that she had connected with the love of God. And many of the stories in the Bible that we sing that are sort of happy songs and happy stories, like that Zacchaeus story, is really a terrible story. Because Zacchaeus was an outcast. He was a wee little man, and he did climb a tree probably pretty well to see Jesus. But he was a social outcast because he was working with the government. And he was well-to-do. He was envied by many people for his money and for what he had attained in life. And they didn't like the way they'd attained it. Jesus would have been better if he had simply cut his losses and said, that's not the kind of person I want around me. But what did Jesus do? Sort of like that little girl that lost her coat, or the friend that had been hurt, Jesus said, I'm going to your house today. That must have horrified people. I'm going to your house. I'm going to connect with Zacchaeus. I'm going to show the kind of love that comes from God, and I'm going to connect with Zacchaeus. Now, I think probably in church there's all kinds of people that wonder when they come into church doors if they can connect with us. Do you believe that? They're burdened down with problems. I think probably some of the worst case scenarios are people like, not just that Samaritan woman, but I think in today's world we're going to have some people that come to the church, and they may be homosexuals. They may have a lifestyle, and they may be just testing us how we're going to accept them. And it troubles me that so many times in today's world the church has a reputation of hating homosexuals. You know that? We're developing that. And we need to remember the old saying, we hate the sin, but love the sinner. That means we welcome people, even in their lifestyle, but we don't accept the lifestyle. And we do expect them to repent when they come to God. We expect them to turn from that. We do not accept that lifestyle. But we have to go out of our way to connect with people that are distant from God and are hurting. And that's a whole different lifestyle, isn't it? That's what I admire so much about Celebrate Recovery. It's reminding us as a church that there are people that are coming with very deep issues in life, deep hurts, lifestyles that are totally different from the way God would like us to live, that are hurtful, and they come with many hurts. And what is the CR mantra? God never wastes a hurt. And so they're reminding us that we are working with people where they are, loving them where they are, and that's what Jesus' love is about, the responsibility to reach out to people that are less, least, and lost. And last in this formula that I promised to give you about Jesus' love is the formula that, well, we all know it, is that God is love. In fact, let's look at two scriptures. These scriptures are well known. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37 through 40, Jesus replied to someone that the two great commandments are to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it, love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Now, what is the third commandment? Anybody know? What's the third priority? There is no third priority. Okay, let's look at the next verse found in Galatians. The entire law is summed up, says Paul, in a single command, love your neighbor as yourself. Now, this man, Paul, that wrote those words that we read at the introduction about love, love is patient, love is kind, was the kind of man that didn't follow these, this is his priority, as his, he hadn't learned this formula for loving God. And Paul believed that there were so many commands that were to be kept that he was strict on all of them. He was a Pharisee. He loved God. But I think when he became a Christian, it oriented his whole life and changed his entire focus on this ideal of love. So now Paul is writing and believing this very thing. I think sometimes we in churches have other paradigms that we believe too. And like Paul, we read these verses and we kind of nod about them. But I didn't grow up listening to those verses, did you? I didn't know about the priority of those verses. Sometimes people tell me that they didn't hear about grace in church growing up. Why is that? If you didn't hear about grace, you didn't hear about love in action and love's responsibilities. You probably heard something like this. Command. Example, what was the third one? Somebody knows. Necessary inference. Now, you know, everybody knows that we ought to keep God's commands. We ought to keep God's commands, whatever they are. The truth is, though, many people don't keep God's command or are not oriented toward God's commands. So we've got a problem right there connecting with people that, including ourselves, that don't do that. And many people are not following Jesus' example because they don't have the power. They don't have the orientation in their life to follow Jesus' example. And what is a necessary inference? What you infer from the Bible, you say, is necessary. And someone else says, well, I don't see that as necessary at all. So you're set up for an argument, aren't you? And maybe that's the reason why we do argue so many times. Now, there are many people throughout their lifetime have tried to follow God's commands as best they could. And I'm not making light of that at all, because I believe all of God's commands need to be followed. I'm suggesting to you, if that is your orientation in the Bible, you're going to have a way of judging people that come across as not doing those things. And you might even be unkind to those people that don't follow the inferences that you believe are necessary. I think what we need to learn is this formula put into practice, which Paul says. Now, look at this with me. In 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verses 1 and following, I want to read these. Paul says, "If I speak in the tongues of men and angels and have not love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains but have not love, I am nothing. And if I give all that I possess to the poor and surrender my body to the flames but have not love, I gain nothing." You know, in all of the Bible, the only person that I know that ever talked about moving mountains, you know who that is? It's Jesus. Now, let's just put this in context. Let's suppose someone as great as Jesus could move mountains, walk on water, heal the sick, and give himself not to the flames but to the cross, but didn't have love. What would it profit? You see where Paul gets this? I think it's from Jesus himself, because Jesus Christ is the very embodiment of love. So these actions are propelled for the ideal that I am responsible to show love in my prophecy, which might imply preaching, in my ability to work and to give and to exert all the influence of resources that God has given me. It is prompted by this formula of love, this responsibility that goes beyond naturalness and beyond family, but is a Jesus love. It is a God love that orients our life in a way perhaps that even conflicts with the way we have been taught. Let me ask you this. Could it be a priority in your life? And if so, what would have to change? If you began to see these priorities that Jesus talked about, and it reversed the way you read the Bible, and especially the way that you interacted with people in the world, how would it change your life in the church? I've known people in this church and in other churches as well that said, you know, I don't believe that everything that this church does is right, but I love the people in this church. I've known people that didn't believe in eating at the church building. And you know, I didn't make a real bad habit out of bad-mouthing them or anything. I just noticed that they just excused themselves and they didn't make any problems at it. There's people probably at this church that don't agree with some things that go on, or maybe even some songs that we sing, or maybe the way we do things. They may not even like the preacher, but they love the church, and so they overlook many things, right? Because that's what love does. It has responsibility of overlooking faults, of overlooking sins, and it has a way of even alleviating people's fears. Do you believe that? So in the same way that the little girl that was hurt or lost something valuable, love has a responsibility that orients a person in a different way, a way just like Jesus. Now let me ask you, does this formula mean something a little bit more to you now? Can you see that the formula of Jesus' love, just like that equation of energy, has to be translated into action? And then you've got the power of love. The closing thought that I want to leave with you is just this. Sometimes we're afraid. Sometimes we're afraid that we're going to miss one of the doctrines in the Bible. I might miss a doctrine, but I don't want to miss the disposition of Jesus Christ, which was love. How about you? Oh, we got an invitation hymn. Does he need to respond to Jesus Christ? We're going to sing it, not as just an afterthought, but as God's way of saying, I love you. And you can respond, but if you do, it's because I'm reaching out to you in love right now. So when we sing this song, if you feel God reaching out to you in love, and you need us to show you Jesus' love, it'd be a great time. Let's stand and sing the invitation hymn.
What will you do with Jesus? The question comes to you, and you must give an answer, for something you must do. What shall it be? What shall it be? What shall your answer be? What will you do with Jesus? Oh, what will your answer be? What will you do with Jesus? He's knocking at the door.